Blog Talk Radio. Storybox Audio.
Good evening and welcome to the Sunday show. I'm here at Be Monsters Radio with host Wayne Johnson and author Ronald Feynman, and I'm the producer Gwen Berry. And good to hear you this weekend. Guys, how's it going out there for you?
Go ahead, Professor. You start.
I just published an article comparing Robert Kennedy and Joe Biden, who were both born on the same day, different years, and how, in many ways, they do have a connection. I just published it on History News Network, and I sent it to both of you and to others. So connection there. And he has a Robert Kennedy bust on the right side of the photograph when he sits there in the Oval Office. That's the one out of all the busts and all the photographs and all the portraits he has. That's the one that's right there, Robert Kennedy.
Very good. So, and for me, Annapolis, which I love living in Annapolis, May the 1st, of course, was Saturday, and it's an annual tradition for many years that different shops, proprietors of shops, right, and some of the historic homes around the area will display a basket of flowers as the homage and announcement, you know, of spring is here. And they're very, very beautiful.
It's an Irish custom of putting flowers before the threshold of your door as a shopkeeper to keep away the fae and the fairies and to bring abundance and prosperity into your shop. Do you know that?
I believe that's correct, Glenn, and I'm glad you passed that on. Yes, it's. Now, I'll tell you what, I will say that people did come out just to walk around and see, you know, all the beautiful flowers in their basket by the store, entrances to the doors, stores and stuff. And I know there was a lot of foot traffic that went into those stores because people were, well, especially after coming out of COVID. In the open areas, we don't have to wear masks anymore, right? I still kind of do, but, you know, you go into the store, you'll put your mask on. Well, walking down the street, you kind of don't. But anyway, people were ready to get out. That's the bottom line.
Thank goodness.
Well, spring is here. So people are enchanted with nature in the north again, and that's always a good thing. It's April 30th is May Eve, and of course it's May Day, which has a whole bunch of revolutionary connotations to it, you know?
True.
Yeah. So there
See,
was
I was
going
to say,
much...
where my grandsons go to preschool, they put out a maypole, and some of the older kids, they're pre-K, and the kindergarten kids, they had them, you know, walking around doing the intertwining and stuff, wrapping the maypole with brightly colored ribbons, and then left it on display. So that was when I went with my daughter to go pick them up and stuff, they had done that, and that was kind of nice, and the boys were excited about it and all that. And of course,
You know what the maypole's for, right?
I'm sorry, say that again?
You know why they decorate a pole and put the ribbons on it, the maidens do.
If I did, I forgot. So, you know, please pass it on. What elaborate.
It's the maidens who decorate the maypole and twist around until it's done. It's a fertility rite. It's the young maidens looking for their partners, you know.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
The beginning of spring, high spring, is always the biggest fertility dances, and in many cultures, from Hellenistic to Celtic to even through cultures across the world, this was the time when spring came. They would have these lovely festivals. This was a festival.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they praise the Lord of the Forest or the green man, the green god. And the Mother Earth and the goddess who brings fertility and the abundance of children and stuff. So May Day or Beltane is always a festival called a Great Rite, which is about basically, you know, having some fun in the evening.
Well, very nice. Yes, well, I guess with my Viking Celtic DNA, I did go out for my old man walk this morning in downtown Annapolis to enjoy the flowers, but then later on this afternoon around 3 o'clock, 3:30-ish, Carol and I went out and we walked through the nature trails of one of the parks here. And
yeah.
Very nice. Just communed with nature. It was beautiful. The dogwoods were in bloom in the woods.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah, it's very nice right now along the in the northern realms where all of these trees are greening and budding and blooming. I miss it.
I understand.
I miss the lilac. The lilac.
Oh, yeah,
blooming.
Lilacs. Yeah. Well, on those two, no, this is one of my favorites. The wisteria. And back.
Oh, yeah.
On the Eastern Shore, close by my farm, they're Chesapeake Corporation, which is like a wood pulp company, and they had this, they're like the largest landowner in the peninsula. There were these very mature loblolly pines planted in like cornrows, so they can get in and harvest and trim them up, and we call out for crown release, those that were not growing straight enough and those that would continue on to become limber and stuff. Well, in this one spot on a back dirt road along the Marshy Hope River, which is not developed, it's still very pristine, there had been an old farmhouse. And I'm sure it was the farmer's wife had planted a wisteria bush umpteen, you know, 100 plus years ago. And when everything was abandoned and those loblolly pines had grown into their cornrown forests, the wisteria ran rampant through it, and it, you know, in the spring, right, the fragrance of the wisteria blossoms that were just hanging gardens of Babylon kind of a thing. They're just draped across the trees. They're hanging down and just intoxicated perfumes of that whole woods. And people would come from all over just to look at that wisteria dangling from these loblolly pines, almost like Spanish moss. Well, with these beautiful grape cluster blossoms on it, and it was magical.
It's that time of year where things, all new things are being born. It's true. It's also, it's a good time of the year to formulate your intentions for what you want to put through as goals, you know, at this time for the harvest season. Remember,
well, last May was so depressing because of the worsening of the pandemic, but now things are looking so much better.
Well, they are looking better where people have, you know, gotten vaccinated, and it is looking better. I'm not climbing on a cardboard box pyramid of, you know, it's all going back to normal tomorrow either. So having traveled recently by cattle car plane, I can tell you that there is no protocols out there for keeping people from spreading it in air travel. None at all.
Right.
And
right.
And wherever you go into like malls or that are opening back up or anything, they're really the only protocol that people are really doing is some places, a lot of places, a majority of places are telling people they have to wear a mask. So
I was going to say the malls around here in Annapolis, you still wear a mask walking through, you know, all the corridors of the malls and into the stores and stuff. So there's some of the stores that are popular, like the iPhone store, they still have you staged up so that you're not crowded into, you know, they let a few in, and there's other, you know, that when people are done shopping, then you let some more in, things like that. So I can definitely say here in Annapolis in the central Maryland, we're still We're still taking precautions.
Well, you also have a governor who is a rare Republican. He's got brains in his head.
Yeah, that is a rarity. I'll grant you that. Yeah, and the thing is maybe, and here's maybe, you know, everyone's the sum of their own life's experiences. He had not been elected governor very long, and he was fighting cancer.
I know, yes.
And he is in remission and stuff. So maybe he was saying, you know, hey, you know, having a serious disease and taking precautions and doing what you have to do to try to make yourself better and healthy again, he probably came into that pandemic, despite, you know, the opposite of what Trump was saying, and signed on board of, no, you have, this can be a very serious disease and it's killing people. And he took probably the mindset that we need to do what we need to do to protect the population.
Yes, but I think he also had the experience of his father, who had the same name, who was a congressman back in the 70s who voted to impeach Richard Nixon. So I think that whole heritage had an effect on his mind as well.
That's a very good point. Like I said, Professor, we are all the sum of our life's experiences.
It's,
and he's one of those people who talked about maybe to run for president. I don't know where he really would go. And, of course, I hope his cancer is truly in remission. But, you know, there's so many people. Even now, imagine this. Liz Cheney, there's talk she might run for president if she's forced out of the House seat. Not that she's going to, I think, be president, but she could be a contender as a female Republican, you know, because she's got a definite following, you know.
Not a very big one among Republicans.
No, right. Well, the thing is,
interesting numbers this last week about the politics right now, and John King on CNN put out a pie of, you know, a little over 3/4 of the country believes that Joe Biden is our president, and then there's about 23 and 28% that think Trump is still the president and running everything through the military or some such. And then they broke down the numbers. And among independents, like 18% of them think that Trump's still president. And then you get the Republicans, and I was stunned because I did not think Republicans were this stupid. But over 70% of them still think Trump is president. I'm like, whoa.
If he is president, then why is Joe Biden getting things done? And why did he give the equivalent of the State of the Union? It's not called that. And why did Liz Cheney give him a fist bump, which is enraging Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader?
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is the thing now. We are such a divided country. But I want you to look at those numbers. You got the first big number that says, like, 23 to 28% think, you know, Bush, they think Trump is still president, right? And the rest of the country is very aware that it's Joe Biden. Then you look at it's 70% and plus 18% of independents and 70% of Republicans are the ones making up the numbers that think Trump's still president. You know, these are a rabid crowd. But the overall on this, the majority, overwhelmingly, the majority of people in this country, we've always known, are Democrats. They've registered that way one time or another. We also know that if all of them were up off their asses and voting in their towns and even general elections, the Republicans would not have the hold that they do. So you've got people who know right from wrong who still sit it out. I thought that was pretty stunning revelation, you know.
Yes,
right. No, absolutely, Glenn. So,
And the thing is, really tragic. Trump's going around saying he won twice. First perverse time he won because of Russian collusion, and he didn't win the popular vote. He lost by a massive margin, and he lost by almost four times a massive margin, more lost, and he's claiming he won. I mean, the guy is delusional, and he goes out in Mar-a-Lago and talks to people who are staying there, and talks in a way that shows that he's mentally gone. I think he really is.
He's that much of a narcissist that he will not accept in his presence anybody saying anything that he doesn't want to hear. That's the difference.
Right.
It's not that's dementia.
The good thing, right?
He's just an asshole. Come on. I mean, come on, gentlemen.
All these Republicans back, asshole, is the issue.
It's
beyond belief that all these elected Republicans, except for a small handful, are willing to continue to back him. It's just insane.
It was striking to me. I spent some time looking at the TikTok and up in my feed, because they'll send you things. Now, I don't really follow any politics outright there. I like, nature stuff and Celtic stuff and that kind of sea shanties I'm big on. But every once in a while, something comes up that's a little affiliated that'll come up. And apparently Mitch McConnell's nephew has a TikTok account that comes through my feed because we have like things. And he came up today and he read a note he got from his Uncle Mitch this past week, because his Uncle Mitch has seen what he calls, which McConnell calls, his tick twits. He calls them a tick twit. And he says, all the things that you are saying about me and how I've conducted my political life are bullshit. He cussed incessantly in this note. The kid was reading it out. Well, he's not a kid. He's in his 40s. But he said, McConnell went on to say that you'll never be remembered for your rants and your rages. None of you libertards will. What is going to be remembered is how many Supreme Court judges I put into the Supreme Court, how many times I put judges on benches, all of these things. And it was a complete confidence in this note that he was some kind of hero and power was his glory. And it was the kid is reading it and he goes, well, that's Uncle Mitch. He even wants his coffee cup back he gave me when I was in the eighth grade. It's like, not only that, but he said, chintzy son of a bitch. Okay, so this is the kind of stuff we got, in Washington, and we all know what kind of an absolute lizard and scumbag Mitch McConnell is.
That's not being nice to lizards, though.
No, it actually isn't.
But that's what worries me, by the way, because the talk about Breyer, who's 82, that he needs to retire in this or next year, I would say this year, and be replaced by an appointment of Biden, because if he dies in office and he is 82, just like Ginsburg did, oh my God, that, it's a 50-50 tie, but that's assuming Manchin will go along and that Harris can break the tie. But then the thought is, some of those senators, like whatever you think of her, Dianne Feinstein, 87, what if she dies tomorrow? Then we don't have 50 Democrats. Then the Republicans control.
Right.
Anytime in the next 2 years, if any Democrat dies, oh my God, So it also with Breyer, if he dies, so it's really scary.
Yeah, it is. We need to get rid of the old farts, I'll tell you.
Well,
we do.
You don't want to get rid of Feinstein too fast, though, because then it'll be an empty seat that won't be filled for long. It's 50 Republicans and 49 Democrats.
Uh-huh. Well, Feinstein won't give up her seat for anything. She's already been approached for two successive terms to get the hell out of the seat and put somebody in there that she mentored or something. And she won't give it up because she's got her hands on, she's power hungry. She and her bank account loves it. That's just the truth. That's an old Democrat machine pumping and humping there, like the rest of those old farts. I mean, they are so, eager to press back a progressive agenda. And I think that, you know, Harris has to play whatever tune she's given. So it's really difficult for progressive politics to be put on the platform. And for all the good things that have happened, I mean, basically what they've been focused on in the White House, yeah, they have a hell of an infrastructure program to put out there. Who's getting those contracts, by the way? Mm-hmm. Like to know that. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of a backdoor dealership is handing out those things? Because it's always been such, no matter what administration. And that's what progressive politicians are trying to stop. A guy like Bernie Sanders doesn't want to see that going on. But, you know, I'll tell you what, we're getting vaccinated, and he's outrun his own agenda and got more done. You can't bitch or moan about what Biden has gotten accomplished with everything that was in his face when he walked in.
It's been 100 days.
Yeah.
He's being compared, probably not correctly, that he could be in the direction of an FDR, LBJ. I hope that's what happens. But, again, it's by thin margins. If anybody dies or suddenly cannot vote, you know, somebody who's incapacitated or Breyer dies, right now there'd be an advantage. But it's just, it's, you know, slight advantage. But it's really scary how everything is hanging on tenterhooks.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the other thing that bothers me is, in Florida, Georgia, Arizona, are basically all passing, because they're Republican-controlled, restrictive voting.
Oh, it's unbelievable what's going on in Florida. DeSantis is horrible.
And Florida now has passed a bill that says anybody, like the social media, you know, how like Twitter banned Trump on inciting the riots and stuff, that those companies will be fined $1,000 a day for not allowing Trump or anybody else like Trump throughout propaganda garbage, that they will be fined $1,000 a day by the state.
That'll be appealed, though, in the courts. But, of course, the courts are not reliable anymore either. There's too many right-wing appointments.
Well, there you go.
But a majority of these right-wing appointments, especially the stupid ones that have been made in the last, like, 8 to 6 years, let's face it, half of them are in the pokey right now or under indictment or being, being examined by the State Bureau of Investigators or the FBI or, come on. I mean,
the Attorney General. They're all crooked as hell, but.
They're pretty stupid. I mean, they really are. They've been pretty stupid choices, and that's blowing up in their faces. And it's going to take a while for this to happen, but I think a great many appointments are going to blow up in the faces of the Republicans. You know, the press doesn't quit, and the majority of the press is not Fox News.
Right.
Thank goodness.
You know,
yeah.
Sun Sentinel's gone after him. Tampa Bay Times has gone after him. I don't know of anything out of Tallahassee that's gone after him. But, I mean, and you got a guy like DeSantis in front of a camera with the press, where the majority of his exposure happens in a larger capacity. And this guy doesn't know how to handle media. He will answers. A probing question with a question and tries to make it out like it's their fault for asking it. It's ridiculous. Now,
that's called a divertive argument.
Yeah,
well, he's considered the mini Trump, and Trump has even said that he would consider DeSantis as his running mate in 2024.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's very ridiculous. And somebody's got to be chiseling away from either Sun Sentinel or the hell, I'd even put that little rag of New Times into it. Somebody's got to be running a heavy-duty you know, investigation on everything DeSantis has been doing.
First, an expose. Yeah, he's really crooked.
Yeah,
and there's talk of Val Demings, the the former Orlando police chief and congresswoman from Central Florida, running either against him or against Rubio for the Senate.
Really?
I think she has a shot
for
at winning it.
For what seat? Whose seat? You mean Tom Scott?
No, so Val Demings, who's African-American, former Orlando police chief, and is a congressman.
I know who she is.
Yeah, Val Demings, V-A-L Demings, yeah. There's talk she's thinking of running either against DeSantis or Rubio in Florida. I think probably DeSantis is the better bet, you know.
Well, DeSantis is holding the seat of the governor, not a senatorial seat.
Well, I know, but I'm saying that this talk that he's coming up for election, so is Marco Rubio, that she might challenge one or the other. It seems likely she will do one or the other, and it's going to have to be pretty soon to get ready for a year for November.
Yeah, well, I'm in accord with that. I mean, Val Demings is one of those conservative Democrats, but, I mean, that's a hell of a lot better than Marco Rubio or DeSantis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Probably the governorship is more important if you had to choose one or the other, but Rubio is also a horror. He's making a fool of himself every day, you know.
He's stayed in power through the beneficence of the Cuban American community in South Florida. And their tentacles up through the state, but a lot of those guys are dying off. We're talking about a really old community there.
Cubans. Younger Cubans are more likely to not be Republicans, though. You're right.
Yeah, they voted Obama in.
Yes.
So there is a division in that community. I know some people from the community who are, you know, in their 40s and on down that are completely, you know, don't want anything to do with the Republican Party. It's embarrassing to them.
And Raul Castro finally retired, so officially there's no Castro in the government anymore.
I don't know what difference that makes.
Because at least you can say he's also 90. He probably is not going to be with us much longer. But the point is, it was a Castroan government since 1959, but he retired completely. He's not even part of the government in the background, I guess because he's 90 years old. You know.
And there's a lot of shifts that have gone on in the Cuban government in the last 10 years, too, since Fidel has not been there to oversee everything. And Cuba, I'm told by the people I know who go down there quite a bit before COVID, Cuba is trying its best to open up. And I know this much, too. Before Batista was yanked off, you know, and Castro got in there. And a lot of Americans would vacation in Cuba. My mom was one, and she adored Cuba. She just loved it. She thought it was beautiful and great and I've always wanted to get down to Cuba myself. Who knows? Who knows? I know as I've known all along, I wish there were more women taking seats of leadership because, I mean, you take a look at what's going on locally and statewide in a lot of communities, absurd voting issue laws that they're trying to pass into the state legislatures. It's really quite awful. And you wonder why people, well, that's because the state legislature, these people are locals who get out and glad hand and make promises. And, you know, people hear things at the time and then don't see the follow through unless it hits them, you know?
Yes.
They listen to what they think is going to work for them. And then they're disappointed because they got lied to. It's like this guy Brian West
again.
Up here.
Again.
He's a lying sack of you know what. And he's done nothing for the community except for a few peanuts spread here and there. And yet he's a terrible person. What he's done to people who have legally and actively protested against him is just, it's incredible. It's just incredible.
Yes.
I mean, people who have homes and lives, and he'll sick the State Bureau of Investigation on them and lie about them, and they have to go through untangling all that. And it's not right or fair. I'm talking about some of my fellow protesters down here in the last couple of years who have had to deal with this kind of thing. You know, I learned a great lesson from my mom. They tell you you can't fight City Hall. Well, my mom did, and she beat him. So to the tune of, you know, I mean, it just, you can. You have to make your stand. People who make their stand, and a lot of them are the ones who are activists today. And look at the people who have joined BLM and walk with that. It takes a great deal of integrity, personal integrity to do it. And it takes a certain kind of personality, you know? Not
and
everybody.
Courage.
It takes courage. It really does, you know, to get thrown I was going to use a very crude term, but to get thrown in.
I wanted to point out that I saw an article this week talking about how many black women have been killed by police in the last 5 years. Not men, only, but women, over 250 black women. And I guess that shocked me, not because I think there should be a difference, but thinking women, that many being killed by police? It's just, it's unbelievable, you know?
Well, we have a policing crisis in this country. We have
do.
A terrible policing. You know, I got to tell you, if you've ever traveled and spent any time at all, and I've spent months at a time in Western Europe, the gendarmes, the English police, even the Garda in Ireland, which is usually pretty, you know, very scrutinizing because of all of the upsets and troubles, as they say over there. But all these different police forces, the Carabinieri in Italy, especially in Rome, I have had nothing but good experiences and protect and serve type of experiences with these policing fraternities or, you know, I think we should call them organizations, not fraternities. But here in America, and a little bit in Canada, I'm told too, the fraternal orders of police, it's just out of hand. It's like, like some places in the country are retirement communities for the Ku Klux Klan, like middle of Florida and such. There's been an active entry into the police force by white supremacists and all kinds of nasty people. Bullies. They're bullies. They're freaking bullies.
It is a siege occupational mentality police force that, now I'm not going to paint with a broad brush, but there's way too much of it within our local community police forces.
Yeah, I agree.
I have a feeling they don't have high standards of what they expect of people to be police. I guess because the argument is most police do not get paid considering the circumstances they have. They don't get paid enough, so they get what they get because nobody wants to pay taxes. Nobody wants taxes, but they want to have services. That's the problem, you know.
That's
a very libertarian point of view, but I get it. The thing is that, you know, and not all people that go into protect and serve and police are are this way. They're still the outstanding heroes amongst the police forces, and especially in the countryside. I mean, the little West Virginia town that has the lesbian police captain who fought for her, you know, for her place, to keep her job because half the community was aghast that she was, you know, of the gay community. Yeah. And then the other half that said, hey, look at the job she does for us. And so the community gathered around her and changed their minds and stuff. So, you know, stories. But what I think, Ron, is one of the worst things that's going on, especially in larger urban areas with police forces, is that they don't have the proper filtering system. Their psych evaluations are bad.
Right.
The FBI gets it right for the most part. You know, you don't hear about FBI agents being, you know, it's stupid old like that. They're not filtering in a bunch of white supremacists. There are, of course, conservative people in the FBI, probably a majority, but these are people mm-hmm. who are conservative in the way that they really do hold on to a standard, right or wrong, of being patriots. Am I wrong?
Exactly. Right. No, that's right. And here's, you know, there's a famous quote I'd like quote, you know me. Said, just tell what kind of a leader someone's going to be. Give them a little bit of power and see how quickly it takes them to start abusing it.
Ooh.
Right?
Yes.
You get this, you know, Billy Bob Screwtard, you know, half of his teeth are gone. He's getting paid $30,000 a year because he can't get a job at Walmart, and he becomes a town cop. Well, now he is empowered. He's feeling privileged and empowered, right? And he can then inflict rage on anybody else because he's in charge now.
Yeah, but you know, Wayne, I got to tell you, a lot of the cops on the last, I think it's almost two decades that have joined, especially urban police forces, have BSs or BA degrees from college, and a lot of them in criminology. They're not exactly, you know, backwoods.
Well, it has
country
to prove, but I'm talking to the backwoods, like that cop in Virginia that stopped that black lieutenant because he didn't see the license tag. The dealer's license tag on the license plate holder. It was in the back window, which was still legal.
Uh-huh.
And then
basically,
you know, he was fired, but he drug him out of the car. He maced him. He did all kinds of, you know,
oh my gosh,
things to him and stuff. And meanwhile, the cop had another partner that was standing right there, you know, kind of deer struck in the headlights as he was doing this. But he was a lieutenant naval officer, and, I mean, he sprayed him in, you know, his eyes were burning. He sprayed him with mace and stuff, tear gas, drug him out of the car, beat him and stuff. And, of course, got recorded. It got recorded.
Yeah, I saw
from
that.
From the cop's own body cam. And when it came out within the next day, that cop was fired.
You know what's really terrifying? Until we started to have cameras, how many people were being abused and killed all along, you know, by cops, and there was no record of it, so we never knew the real circumstances.
That's exactly right. And
unbelievable how at least now it's at least we can catch some people in the act, but
right.
It's pretty scary, you know.
Right, and there's always that time. Oh, my camera failed. Oh, is that right? The guy's dead. Your camera's gone. You know, your camera ran out of battery.
I think we've had mass murder over the years.
Well,
it's like a Will Smith, Prince of Bel-Air and a great actor, said, you know, the abuse to the black population hasn't increased. It's just getting filmed.
Yes.
Well,
even against women, now you hear about women, black, or even otherwise. There was somebody recently that was apparently demented, a 73-year-old woman who was demented,
yes.
and they they broke her shoulder. I think they harmed her shoulder, and it's just unbelievable. She's 73 years old too.
Yeah, and the cops turned around and laughed about it because they popped her shoulder out of her arm.
Yeah, I mean it makes you want to pop. It's
socket.
It's outrageous, you know. Makes you afraid to go near a police officer.
Well, depends upon your demographics. That's correct.
Yeah.
This is not the first time that this is, you know, this has been going on really within police forces in America since the beginning. I think probably the most fair were probably the old marshals and sheriffs of the West who, you know, had to think on their feet and had supreme authority over the town. They were probably, you know, I'm not talking Judge Roy Bean here, but I am talking, you know, Texas Rangers have quite a reputation. Stories abound about their history and how they have kept the peace. And they are not, you know, they're pretty tough, but they they're pretty fair. You know, there was no judge, jury, and all of that. You got to remember, now we have these huge urban centers where there's cops who are of all different flavors, you know, and it's not the same. And I think that what one of the major problems is their psyche valves are just way off. They don't have the right ones. I think that probably people are, you know, there's the certain type that wants to be a cop because they want to protect and serve. And there's another type that wants to serve because it's almost as if it's split right down the middle. It's because they want, you know, white supremacy and power and whatever.
No, there is a lot of that. Absolutely, Glenn. You know, you remind me, Jane Elliott, she was the fourth grade teacher there in the Midwest that did the experiment, brown-eyed, blue-eyed children.
Yes.
And there was one little boy, this is her interview, right? One little boy, he was kind of an underachiever, fat, chubby, you know, kind of teased maybe a little bit by the other children and stuff. And when it was his turn, I can't remember his brown-eyed, blue-eyed, but if it was the brown-eyes that were on top and the better people, she said, he turned into the most perfect little Nazi.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, he inflicted as much, you know, pain, degradation, everything, you know, accusing someone of whatever kind of, you know, crime. He stole something. He's talking in class. He's running in the hallway. And she says, and now they're grown in high school, or just graduated high school, and they had a reunion. And she told her, she says, oh, you know, we'll call him Billy. So Billy says, when you were in power, you were the most perfect little Nazi. And he had to admit it, right? When he saw himself, you know, years later, it's like, damn, I am an asshole. Well, thing is, there's a lot of the cops that, you know, girls are like, oh, I ain't going out with you. You know, you're a geek, you know, and things like this. They can go that far extreme.
Yeah. Well, I think people who are constantly being bullied do become social problems later. I think it's very definitely the case.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Right. And that,
you abuse somebody enough. You abuse somebody enough.
The power of immunity of being prosecuted with that gun.
You abuse somebody enough, and this is likely the case almost every time. You abuse somebody enough, long enough in life, and they're damaged and they need to be healed. And the only way that's going to happen is if they realize it and they seek their own healing, because no matter how much you love somebody or how much you care or see the good side, it's not going to make a difference until that person makes their own choice. And then you take a look at the things that have been happening lately and you realize how unaware a lot of people in this country are of themselves and who they are, you know? They're unaware.
Yeah. Yep. The life experiences is what makes people behave the way they do.
Exactly. Everyone is the sum of their own life's experiences.
Yeah,
you've heard
but
me
we
say
learn.
That many times, Professor.
We learn and we grow, and there's no cap on that. I mean, hell, I'm an elder. I'm a crone. Okay. I have plenty of life experience, but I face new challenges all the time. And
we
I have
do.
To learn. Yeah, and I have to learn and grow through them. I can't stay static. I have to
right.
change with every new thing that comes. Like, hey, I'm going through one right now, and it's changing me. It's not easy. It's
right.
not easy.
No,
no matter what the challenge is, it's not easy. I mean, even people who win the lotto, they have a lot they have to learn and grow with, too. A lot of
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of people who win the lotto end up having all kinds of bad luck after.
Yeah, well they don't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
Well, there was a guy from West Virginia, you know, Billy Bob, you know, Hee-Haw, right? He won the largest lottery at the time of anyone in this country. Well, the money changed everything. He didn't know how to handle it. His wife divorced him. She got half of it and things like that. Anybody coming up and asking for, you know, donate to my church, he was giving them money and things like that. And within less than 10 years, that, like, $200-some million was all gone. He was flat out broke.
That's easier to do than you might think. But I remember there was a story of a fella who won the lottery and big. And it was on our East Coast somewhere here. And they kept, playing the lottery. Would spend, you know, $100,000
mm-hmm.
on lottery tickets and every so often win another jackpot. Now, that guy was really greedy. He was really greedy. But he kept winning money. And I don't know what the lesson is there, except you can have it if
well,
you can keep it.
That's
know?
A gambling addiction. Of course, if he keeps winning, I mean, I don't know how that can come down. I don't know if there's any kind of mathematical algorithm that...
No,
it's
just a matter of buying enough tickets and taking your chance, the odds.
I guess
you know?
So. I guess so.
You
but,
know,
you know
that's
it's not a good
it
retirement
is.
Plan.
Well, it worked for him. I'm like,
yeah,
well, that's off, buddy. That
well,
worked for
well,
him.
Well, I have to admit that that was the exception and not the rule.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that years ago I was playing Florida Lotto and I had six numbers and I got five numbers correct, and I would have gotten $1.7 million, but the sixth number was 22 and I had 21, so I ended up winning I think $2,000. That was the closest I ever got.
Well, there you go.
I've known a couple of people that have won, but not the lotto jackpot. They won on Fantasy Five, which was a couple of $100,000. And somebody else who won on one of those games, too, and they got, like, almost $500,000. But, you know, winning the lotto is a lot of people will dream. I dream about it. I'll get a lotto ticket when I dream or something. But, you know, really, the fun in life, the adventure in life is taking the risk to go and build what you can dream. And there's no rules. There's just no rules. You have to make them up yourself. Listen, guys, I just passed 30 years of following my dream.
Mm-hmm.
And if I drop dead tomorrow, I'm a success because I persevered. I have followed my heart. Like Ron with his writing and his teaching, he's a success. He followed his heart. It's all how we measure our success. And
yes, I want to June next month. It's going to be 49 years since I walked into a classroom. I'm starting year 50 after June 6th, and I can't believe it. But I still love going to. I don't teach much now, but I still teach and I lecture and I write and I enjoy myself. I'm not rich, but I'm happy, and that's the most important thing.
You know, my grandfather, the Johnson side, had a saying: if you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life, and life's too short to be working for a living. Follow your dreams. Follow your heart.
Yes.
Now, you know, yeah, talking about that, I have been doing engineering in some form or another, you know, metallurgical aspects and just crafts, the artisan crafts, electrical, mechanical, engineering and stuff.
How many years?
Over 50 years myself.
50 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I can't believe it's 49 years because I'm only 39.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
Go figure.
I never figured math out.
What a blessing.
Well, you know, when it's something that you're doing, especially these days, I mean, since the 90s and the 2000s, you have a lot of people who have chosen to carve out their own way in the world and do something that they completely is their dream. And a lot of them, still work at it. Success is in the eye of the beholder, you know?
Yes,
yes.
And it's something.
Well, it's your own self-worth. You're viewing your own self-worth.
And
yeah,
I know people who have a lot of money and they're miserable people because they're always worrying about their taxes and about their money. They have no goals in life except having money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's true. There are a lot of people who, you know, hold on to money. I never have.
Never had the convenience of even making that choice.
I've had the choice. I could have, you know, doubled down and kept my eye on things, but I chose to spend money in the way I wanted to, and I don't regret it. I don't.
Yeah.
It's who am I now? Am I pleased with who I am? And I think this is part of what's going on with our society right now and why we have all these issues. And it's come around time. I mean, Mother Nature has swept in on us. We've got a plague that is still going. It's going strong.
Yeah.
Look what's happening to India right now. India is completely, you know, they are in trouble. And Europe is starting to show signs of real trouble again, too. It's morphizing, you know, the virus getting in and morphing on people. It's changing
the
direction.
Aspect, right?
Yeah, and I think it's all about the DNA. But you can't – also, there's another part here, too. I knew to stay locked down for a majority of the time. But I got the vaccination, and I'm still very careful, and I'm going to be. But, you know, if I have the opportunity to go someplace or to do something, judging the safety of it, I will. If it's important enough to you, you'll make the step. I mean, you know, Christ, guys, couple of weeks ago, I took 7 planes to go up north and back, and it was like, I'm telling you, there are no protocols. I did everything I was supposed to do. Got the rapid test, and, you know, I had the vaccine for more than 2 weeks and everything. And these people, the only protocol in travel right now, train or plane, is have a mask on. That's it.
Well, I have a family member on my wife's side, and all. They're farmers, and both of the brothers, and they are extreme Trumpsters. One's wife is even a QAnon. It's that kind of stupidity.
Oh, gosh.
When Carol's mom had just passed, and I was talking with the oldest brother, and I said, you know, about wearing a mask. Well, I'm not going to wear that goddamn mandatory mask. Well, guess who now has COVID?
Wow.
Yeah. How are they doing with it?
You know, you're stupid, you know. Thank you for being stupid, you know.
We could do fewer stupid people in the world, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly right. So.
Yeah.
Which gets back to Darwin's survival of the fittest. And if your brain can't comprehend that a pandemic is dangerous and you need to take precautions, you become extinct. Come on, guys, let's get rid of that DNA trail.
Yeah, the Darwin Awards.
Darwin Awards, that's right. He definitely, as far as I'm concerned, within the family, that one has won the Darwin Award.
Oh, my gosh. So what's he saying now? Not saying anything, huh?
I don't talk to him. You know, they are so deep. It's almost like the religious Moonies, you know, where you can't have an intervention. You need a deprogramming.
Yeah.
And they have been listening to the Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, the Fox programming stuff for so damn long that really what is going to be required is a true deprogramming.
Yeah, but what about Tucker Carlson saying people have their kids wearing masks are committing child abuse? He's
again,
really sick.
Propaganda, you know, exactly. One thing is, and this is something they would hear from her and then start quoting it, right? I'm not going to have any of my damn kids wearing that mask. You know, that's child abuse. They would repeat that after Tucker Carlson would have broadcasted it there on TV. And I'm like, you know, I have nothing in common with you. You're too goddamn stupid for even me trying to say good morning to you, you know?
Because if you say good morning, they'd say, what's good about it?
Yeah, or something, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I was wondering how you guys, the last few minutes here, does anybody have any commentary on the speech given by the president this past week?
Professor?
I thought that it was really, you know, he's not an orator. That he is not. He's not John F. Kennedy, our president. He's not even Ronald Reagan in ability to speak. But I think he gave an excellent message, and he showed a bold vision. And I don't know what's going to happen because it's a very evenly divided House and Senate. But I think he's got all the right inspiration. And even Elizabeth Warren and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders seem to be quite pleased with him. So I think it's in a good direction, but what will happen, it depends on, you know, on Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, and maybe a person like Lisa Murkowski, possibly, you know, on the other side. It's going to be difficult to get a lot of it done, but he's in the right direction, certainly, the correct direction, not right.
Yes, you said that correctly. Okay. I didn't put any kind of stock or even of value to the metering of his speeches, you know, his words, his phrasings, his the meter of how he was saying it. I listened to what his vision was and what he wanted to try to go in the direction for the country, and I think he has got it nailed. This is where we need to go as a nation.
And it doesn't sound like he's an old demented, as these critics always keep on saying.
No.
Perfectly fine.
Yeah. You know? Shit up against the wall and hope it stick.
Who said that?
Don't you remember?
The right-wing media is
constantly. I think he's got
some people who say he's demented. He's at all time. They also say Pelosi and Harris are manipulating him.
Yeah. Here's one
we
for you.
We should be so lucky. I mean.
Yeah, exactly, Gwen. I don't care who's pulling the strings on this marionette. It's working.
Dr. Jill, who I just praised today on my blog as a really elegant, decent first lady who has, it's intelligent, has really restored the stature of her position as a Melania Trump. So,
yeah.
I mean,
wouldn't
allow anybody to manipulate her husband, believe me. Any more than Nancy Reagan would do that with Ronald Reagan, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a real show, wasn't it? I mean, give me a break.
I like Grace Underfire had a little line you're talking about because her girlfriend's husband, who was kind of conservative, he was saying, well, Hillary Clinton's our first woman president, you know, conservative. She said, no, Nancy was. Hillary's just doing a better job at it.
Well, gentlemen, that's all the time we have this week.
I won't be on next week because I'm going to be getting a new lease on a car, so I have to say it won't be available if you have the show next week. But I'm looking forward to the next time we can be all together.
Always a pleasure, folks. Gwen, let's close this out.
Okay. Well, thank you all for listening. This has been the Sunday Show on Here Be Monsters Radio. Please tune in tomorrow night at 8 p.m. for Come Now, Don't Sulk with Sybil Brunson. We can all use the laughter and the good news and listen to a little bit of criticism about the state of the union on that side, too. Wayne Johnson and author Ronald Feynman, co-host with me.
Thank you.
We will... we'll be back probably the week after next. So
very good.
Week?
Thank,
oh.
Thank you for tuning in.
Well, then I won't be missing a show if you're not having a show next week. Good.
Well, good night, okay. All. Great show. Always a pleasure.
Yes, the three best people in the world we are.
Thank you, gentlemen. We are done. Okay, stay safe out there. Good night.